Hi, I'm Chris Caldwell, and welcome to Season 3 of Conversations on Climate. We sit down with the experts who are trying to solve the biggest challenge of our time before time runs out. Plastic pollution and ocean health is a huge topic. But like so much about our environmental crisis, the worst of the impacts are invisible to us here in the West. We buy a plastic bottle, we drink it, we dump it, that's it. But go to the beaches and rivers of Southeast Asia and Africa, and you see what the reality of our addiction to plastic really looks like, and just how dangerous it is for the lifeblood of our planet. But this is 2024, and we need to move beyond telling stories of the developing world as nothing but victims of disaster. They're not just waiting for the West to come and save them. Even for issues as complex as ocean science, local people are doing it for themselves. Here's one of those stories. Today, I'm excited to present my conversation with one of the Green Vision Summit 2024's ambassadors, Richmond Kennedy Quarko. Richmond is a graduate in ocean science, a naval officer, and a passionate activist for the ocean in his home of Ghana. In 2018, he set up an NGO, Plastic Punch, to tackle this crisis by recruiting local communities to become cleanup teams, citizen scientists, and political voices. Today, he explains how to think about oceans, both globally and locally, what grassroots action looks like in West Africa, and how we can do better than just recycling. This is a voice worth listening to. So stay with us for another conversation on climate. Around 80% of people who listen to this podcast haven't hit the follow button. If I could ask you for a small favor, if you do enjoy our conversations, please do hit that follow button on your app. It would help us in the show more than I could possibly say. Thank you, and enjoy the conversation. Okay, Richmond, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. You have such an interesting and wide-ranging background as an environmental leader, naval officer, teacher. But there's one kind of unifying kind of concept that kind of comes in and ties it all together, and it seems to be the ocean and a general kind of appreciation of the ocean. Have you always had a love for the ocean, and where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks. For this, Chris, I really like the first question already. With the ocean, really, I really give it to my parents. I grew up by the coast, by the beach. So it was something we're doing every weekend, taking the dogs to the beach, spending a lot of time in the beach, building sandcastles, and very, very clean at the time when I was growing up. So that is really where my love for the ocean began. Always fascinated by these fisher folks taking their boats out there and then coming back with a lot of fish in the days. I thought it was really beautiful. And even those of us who help to pull just the line of the fish, we get some fish to bring back home. So it was really nice to just go out every weekend with the dogs, with the family, have a nice family time, play on the beach, and then still get some fish to come home with for free, getting what the ocean, benefiting from the ocean resources. So really pretty much that's where the love for the ocean began. Over the years, of course, we know the situation now. Most of these beaches where I used to go growing up are no more. They've become a trash dump, and I felt there's the need to act. And that is how come Plastic Punch and all the efforts that we pull out in everyday work, trying to revert this menace for future generation to have a glimpse of the childhood that I had growing up in Ghana.
Fantastic. And can you give us a little bit more about your own background then? How you, before we get on the Plastic Punch, like how you got to that point?
Okay, great. So I studied over here in Ghana, really basic education, like everyone else. Then to the Regional Maritime University, where I wanted to be a doctor or an engineer at the time, but then the dreams changed. I realized it's not something for me, and then got into the Regional Maritime University, where I studied nautical science. And with nautical science, it comes with appreciating the ocean more from the different aspects of basic celestial and terrestrial navigation, ocean systems, Getting to know some engineering also over there, of the ocean technology. So all this was very fascinating a lot. And so after that, I wanted to head out to sea, or I headed out to sea to work on the open ocean for a while as a merchant navy officer, moving cargo from port to port. So container vessels, bulk carriers. So pretty much doing this around the world for close to 5 years. And on one of my returns to Ghana, calling on the port of Tema, the port of Takrade, one of the ports we have in Ghana in 2016. It was Christmas Day. That is the day I saw the condition of our coastline again. I had been out for a bit, and I felt there was really the need to act. So I honorably called off or signed off my vessel. And I started this plastic punch journey. Before plastic punch, really much, my upbringing has been very close to the media space as well. Seeing how TV production works with a parent, every Saturday being in these theaters and seeing the behind the scenes and also what goes on the screen. So I'm very in contact with media and how information is disseminated. Since growing up. So then I felt these were tools that I could put together with the knowledge of the ocean, with the knowledge of plastic pollution. Knowledge of plastic pollution really grew when I was writing my thesis on the viability of marine plastic pollutants as a raw material. At the time, I really thought the real solution to the plastic pollution menace is to recycle or use these materials that are polluting as a raw material for something else. So really within that period, I got to learn more about the material and realize couldn't even understand how we make this a material that comes into contact with food and all that, knowing the toxins or the additives which are added to it that affects human health and marine ecosystem, etc. So pretty much that has been the journey, and I really appreciate the journey. It's been slow and steady, but a lot of observation and a lot of learning also from different contexts and sharing of best practice and also adapting and adopting different methods and protocols around the world.
Okay, excellent. And you're obviously doing a lot of climate communications now, ocean-based climate communications now. You're in Barcelona at the moment, about to talk at a conference. And of course, we're in touch because we're both involved in the Green Vision Summit in Malta. So you're one of the global ambassadors. What does that mean to you, and what do you want to achieve by taking up that position?
Oh, that means a lot. I'm very honored to be part of this movement. I love the direction that the Green Vision is also moving. You would agree with me, a lot of meetings or convergence of people trying to solve a solution in the past has been more of talk shows. But now is the time really where we need evidence-based advocacy. We also really need solutions to all the challenges we face. And all this has to come with the right connections and right networking, also linking investors with solution makers, etc. And I really believe the Green Vision is one of these platforms, and that is why I did not hesitate at all. Also to give hope to people from West Africa and Ghana, where I come from, that yes, there's hope to be innovative, to find solutions, and support will come through different avenues, for which Green Vision is also a part, to amplify the work of a lot of great works which is going on, and also finding the right or mobilizing the right finances to be able to go towards this direction. So yes, Green Vision, when it came, I was like, yes, let's go. It's really beautiful. I love the whole concept. It's green. That's the vision we want for the planet. And it really ties up with my personal vision of trying to create a better environment for the future generation. I've been very passionate about capacity building also in ocean sciences over the years, and science communication. I'm a strong believer that science has not communicated so much in spite of all the research and work that has been done. So this is how We use tools or programs like the Coastal Ocean Environment School, where we build capacity in Ghana and Nigeria. We'll be going to Kenya next year, expanding this, where we are able to teach new tools for analyzing data, teaching the scientific community over here in Africa how to use like Python. The last question we showed how to use Giovanni, which is a new programming language. We go beyond that also to show different scientific protocols in biogeochemistry, in the science and policy of plastics, in the fishery sector. So different tools, new innovative tools for us to be able to achieve that evidence-based advocacy regime for our governments to also listen to the real situation on the ground. So this really ties up with Green Vision really greatly. Green Vision is a nice movement. I really love the vision around it, bringing innovation and solutions to one place and to be able to propel this actions and results.
So you've touched upon it a little bit before when you're describing your background and your journey into this work. But could you give us a little bit more information on how climate and pollution have affected the coast of Ghana?
Yes, certainly. So Ghana has a 550 kilometer coastline, very rich in flora and fauna. Like I said, growing up, it was one of the beautiful, still most beautiful country I've ever seen in my life, besides the pollution right now. To give you an idea how horrible it is, the state of pollution is, according to the UN, there's going to be more plastics than fishes in the ocean if we do not change our how we behave in our consumerism and everything by 2050. Unfortunately, in Ghana, in some communities we serve and work, like in Pram Pram, in Ada, they are already having these situations. And even Dansoman, where I grew up, we are already having these effects where fisher folks are catching only plastics rather than fishes, affecting their livelihoods, affecting their age-old livelihood of fishing, which about 70% of the whole coastline of Ghana depends on. That really is a big blow. Beyond affecting only humans, it's also affecting marine life. So Ghana is home to endangered species of turtles. And most of these turtles are ingesting most of these plastics, as observed from our turtle monitoring sessions that we've had. And turtles also play a very key role in the ocean ecosystem. So we are really losing this marine life because of this pollution. Also really much tied with, how do I put this? It is a very sad situation in Ghana because the plastic revolution just came less than 20 years ago. So 20 years ago, if you walk the beaches or coastlines of Ghana, it was as beautiful as it was some years ago. But then the material came to us without the right awareness, without the right infrastructure. And at the moment, it is really, really, really sad. Single-use consumption is really on the rise. The mindset has really shifted greatly and quickly. Growing up here, just an example is we were taking baskets to the market. We're taking our own bowls to go and get food when I was growing up. Now that is not a practice anymore. All because of this convenience that the single-use plastics comes with. And it is really, really devastating seeing communities lose their livelihoods, seeing all this marine life wash ashore, and also the loss to tourism. Ghana's third biggest earner is the touristic industry. And you can imagine how all this is going to impact all these ecosystems. So yes, we are really, really, really at a tipping point over here in Ghana, especially close to the urban areas. And beyond what we also find over here through our data sets, our citizen science process, we also realize that there are some trash that we find, which is certainly not from Ghana, mostly has to do with the textile waste and the e-waste. So there's the need to call out waste colonialism as well. And so it is a lot of problems we are facing here, which is really, really, really seriously destroying our coastline at an alarming rate.
When we talk about climate, it's quite easy to call out carbon. And just sort of you say like a ton of carbon here is a ton of carbon everywhere. So it's very easy to call this a universal problem. But it sounds like the plastic problem is much more kind of locally focused. Is that true? Or is it kind of Ghani's waste in your own oceans that's the main problem? Or is there kind of an international element to it as well?
It's both. We have the Ghanaian problem from what is coming in from our waterways. That is easily identifiable, linked to food packaging and access to clean drinking water. But at the same time, you still find data sets on the beaches where you find a lot of toys, a lot of e-waste parts, sound speakers, parts of TV, blender, really a lot of things that are very foreign to the communities that we serve, because then we also try to apply models to understand where are the sources of this plastic pollutants. And you'd realize that beyond what we are producing, yes, Ghana is really, because of ineffective waste management systems, we are not doing so well with how we handle our waste. However, there's still this lax legislation which allows somehow for secondhand clothes and e-waste to come into the country. At the moment, there's a place over here in Ghana called Agbogbloshie, which is one of the places which receives most of the world's e-waste, especially from Europe. And last time when it was tested, it is one of the most polluted places in the world, or most toxic places in the world. That gives the idea of the tons of trash coming in the name of donation, for which about 80% is trash, is also another thing to point out. So yes, it's both sides of the problem. We have our own problems here, but of course, I can say 40 to 50% of the trash that we find in our data sets are definitely not from the communities we serve, and are either dumped by a ship somewhere, which is against MAPOL and S5, of course, but ships still do it. It's hard to monitor. So yes, it's both sides of the coin in this case.
Okay, but I was really glad to hear that there's an easy solution. So what you said is that creating a sustainable environment for future generations is easy. We just need an entire revolution in collective human consciousness. Brilliant.
Exactly. That's all we need to do.
Simple. But yeah, like joking aside, ocean awareness has improved a lot over recent days. So like lots of work has been done on microplastics. There's been some big documentaries, and we're now starting to understand how heating oceans impacts on climate change. So a lot of work has been done, but clearly it's not sufficient. You know, we're not there yet. What do most people still not understand when it comes to the importance of oceans?
We still do not understand, in my opinion, that the ocean is connected. It's one ocean, one planet. And with all this ocean current, one trash that you can pull off, maybe on the coastline of Liberia, will find its way in Ghana. Same way with this current, can move to other countries. So the transboundary nature of the ocean is sometimes, though we see it on the maps, sometimes we do not really think about it well. And I really believe that's how come most countries have been selfish in protecting protecting the general ocean. But of course, there's also like really great initiatives like the UN Decade of the Ocean. There's also, for plastics, there's also the Global Plastic Treaty, which is being negotiated. And these issues are coming up. And I really believe that when we start seeing the ocean as one, as a shared resource, we would definitely do better in how we interact to the ocean. Ocean literacy, of course, is really low in some areas, and especially in areas where they used to benefit more. And now with the current dispensation of pollution with plastics, textiles, etc., they find even less value for the ocean, which is really unfortunate. But yes, we need to really disseminate all this work and information to the communities, for them to understand where we are, what the science is saying, and what we need to do to get the ocean held back. Another thing I'll quickly add is also, humans are sometimes really selfish. When we speak about all these issues, we think we are destroying the ocean, but no, the ocean is going to heal itself at some point. The real question is, can we be able to stand when the ocean starts to heal itself from all these impacts that we are putting out there? So we really need to understand well. And I believe by starting to understand, it's already a big step in finding the real solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there kind of one message that you'd like everybody to understand? Just kind of say kind of one sentence or two sentences that would get into everybody's heads to kind of prompt people towards more action on oceans?
I would say, and I always say this, that protecting our ocean makes sense in every language. And we all need to move towards that. Protecting our ocean makes sense in every language.
Okay. And what do you mean by that?
So protecting our ocean, whether you speak French or whether your native language is Spanish or Italian or Mandarin, Swahili, in all indigenous cultures, I've realized that there's always been that need to, there's always been that interaction with the ocean. And with time, we kind of lost this indigenous knowledge or indigenous ways that we do things or interact with the ocean. If we could only go back to our language, our culture, our traditions as a people in every language possible, I believe we'll find that link that will kick us or push us to protect this ocean. And that is why I say protecting our ocean makes sense in every language.
Great. So in 2018, you founded Plastic Punch. And kind of central to this initiative is the beach cleanup. Could you tell us, describe a kind of a typical beach cleanup day?
So this is why we started the beach cleanups. We went for a turtle monitoring session, and out of the six turtles we saw, five of them were dead. We could not scientifically diagnose what the cause of death was, but when you look at the beach, we realized that there's a link with all the pollution and everything. With the plastic pollution, with some of the turtles physically entangled in plastics. So for our beach cleaners at Plastic Punch, we are really much aware that it is not a solution to the plastic pollution menace. So a typical beach cleanup, what we seek to achieve is one, to bring the community in contact with the problem, because we clean on wild beaches. And what we mean by wild beaches are beaches where nobody lives. Nobody has dumped trash there. And all the trash is coming in by the ocean currents. When the communities come into contact with this, it really tickles a lot in the mind, realizing that, hey, nobody lives here, but we are finding all this trash over here. Now, with the process of a cleanup, we have like 300 to 600 people joining the cleanups. Those are the mega ones. And then for the community focus one, we have well over 30 to 60 community members joining every action. We incorporate what we call edutainment. A mixture of entertainment and education, because we really believe that to send a message and to understand the problem, it needs to be sent in different ways. So we have workshops, we have theater, we have videos which screen on TV, we have music, live music over there with the concept. There are games also with the concept. And then going to the collection itself, this is where we collect relevant data to support the SDG 14.1 reporting for the Republic of Ghana, which Ghana is the only country to be able to do this, to report this, thanks to our data sets. So we collect data on who is polluting and what is polluting. So the who is polluting data is ideally taking data on these companies and carrying out a brand audit to be able to understand what are the different brands polluting the beach. Now, with this data set, we use this data set to instigate for an extended producer responsibility regime over here in Ghana. And we are still speaking on it at the multi-stakeholder level. We have the support from the World Bank, the Ministry of Environment is part of it, and Ghana Empire by the World Economic Forum is all part of this multi-stakeholder discussion. With this data set on who is on what the different pollutants are, these ones are used. We use this data to be able to understand to determine the recycling rate, one of the things we find in the community. We also are able to use these data sets to identify what the problematic plastics are so that they can be banned and phased out. That is also a discussion which is on the very high level multi-stakeholder platform over here in Ghana. So those are the two things we do with the data sets. Most importantly, number three is we share the data with the Ghana Statistical Service and also with the municipality where we are working. And a success story from one of the municipalities we work in, Proa in Nungwa, is since 2019, they've not had any issues of flooding. And this is because we went into the community, we realized there's so much PET bottles in their gutters and waterways. And then we link them to recyclers. Though we do not believe in recycling, for us, reduction is the best. You really need to reduce, emphasis on reduction, and then you do not need to manage. However, it's still part of the solution, recycling. So we link these guys. And since 2019, they've not had any issues of flooding. So that's how the beach cleanup looks like. People come in from all ages, very family-friendly events, a little bit of sports, a little bit of workshop, and a little bit of ways that by the time you leave that five-hour event, you are able to understand or get more information on pollution, on how to segregate a home, and also to understand that you can be part of the solution to inspire sustainable lifestyle. So that's basically a beach cleanup, a plastic punch beach cleanup.
Fantastic. Yeah, I love the two aspects of that, with the education and engagement and the citizen science. But also, it seems like you've got you're pulling out some very valuable data and very interesting data that, if it was better publicized, could be, you know, firing rockets under the polluters, the PET polluters. Is that data getting out into the world, like through social media or whatever? You say, well, for like this beach year, you know, 40% of it was, say, from Coca-Cola bottles. What a disgrace that is! And, you know, are you getting any sort of action or traction from any kind of, you know, media, social media connections like that?
So data is like a knife. I really love your question, Chris. Data is like a knife. It could be used for good and bad. And what we realize with the brand audit data since the onset is we try to approach some of these companies to let them understand that, hey, this is what your things are doing. And interestingly, most of them, instead of responding that, hey, we are polluting, let's do something about it, they were more like, oh, we are doing well in these areas. We are selling more in these areas. So we started to keep the data to ourselves and share them rather with the relevant stakeholders to come up with policy directions, like the extended producer responsibility. However, we've come we have collaborations with WasteBase and some other like-minded entities with the from the Break Free from Plastic movement, who are in the same mindset. And we are speaking on how to make the data public, but still protecting the data, kind of, that it is not used as a marketing tool, but rather for the solution. So yes, it's something we're really working on. From time to time, we do publish some of the polluters that we find on some beaches and the number of bottles which has been audited, showing their ranking. And people love to see that, and people call them out. The volunteers call these companies out to act. But really, by acting over here in Ghana, we need the extended producer responsibility framework. And this is what we've been instigating with these data sets all the while, so that all these companies, rather than having points to greenwash, would be rather would be more part of the solution than just talking and taking data to help their marketing needs.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And just kind of sticking with policy for a minute, I've seen some fantastic before and after pictures. So one of the solutions, of course, is changes in policy. What has been the policy progress in Africa since you started in 2018?
Whoa, yes, a lot has changed since we came here. So when we started, really much the focus was on recycling. So we had to use the first 2 years to prove that it cannot work, especially in a country like Ghana. It could work, but when the collection systems are not built, the waste management system is not effective, then you cannot promote recycling as an option. So when we came at Plastic Punch, we really came with a mindset with the emphasis on reduction. And a lot of people have bought into this concept since we came. That is the volunteers and the punchers, we call them, the citizenry. However, for the policy direction on the full scale, the fact we are already talking about banning some of these plastics is big progress. We were not having these discussions 5 years ago. The government only give threats of banning. However, since plastic punch, we are now using a very evidence-based way to talk about these issues. It's not all about speculation anymore. It's really factual that this is what is happening in these communities and that. And let's look at this data and define what's problematic is. Let's ban this. Also for the extended producer responsibility regime, it has really I know Nigeria also wants to start that now. We got some calls from them. They are Ghana MPAP. They wanted to get some best practice. Though we don't have ours in policy yet, we are getting calls from other countries and helping or supporting other countries in how an extended producer responsibility will look like or should look like in their own countries, respective countries. Beyond this, we are very excited also that there's the global plastic treaty negotiations ongoing, for which Ghana is playing a key role. And of course, we also called for that and for that our government to be part. So we are really thankful to the government of Ghana for taking a lead role in Africa in these issues of plastic pollution and coming up with a policy direction. I know they are working a lot. Ghana especially is working a lot on transboundary pollutants. And there are also discussions on a universal EPR system. That's going to be very hard to negotiate, but it's still going to, I really believe that it is needed, looking at the transboundary nature of these pollutants that we are speaking about. So all in all, yes, there's been some positives. There's been also some investment towards alternative packaging, or there's been more, you start seeing the shift towards alternative packaging, which is something we also do or invest in at Plastic Punch. And also, we recently launched a water solution, for an example, where people come with reusable bottles and do not have to buy all these sachet and bottles that they get here. And interestingly, people are using the in-super machine. That really tells that people are really aware now. And we also get that pressure from people onto the government that hopefully they'll start including their manifestos and things like this to convince us to vote for them. So it's people power and trying to give more power to the people, let the people understand the power that they have, that they have the purchasing power, we have the purchasing power. If we do not buy this product, they'll stop manufacturing them. And that is the mindset. And I really believe the movement is growing. It's been growing all these last years, and it can only get stronger and stronger.
That's great. It's really exciting. Before I move on, I'd like to kind of go back a little bit. You've mentioned a couple of times that you're no fan of recycling. Is that, and you mentioned that a part of the issue is infrastructure, just lack of infrastructure. Well, there's plenty of parts of the world where there is lots of infrastructure, but recycling doesn't particularly work particularly well either. What's your overall view of recycling as a solution to plastics?
I think recycling is very energy intensive. It is really a great tool for greenwashing. As evidenced in Ghana, there was a report on Bloomberg on some of the companies over here trying to recycle, and it's just clear greenwashing. And it is a very powerful greenwashing tool, energy intensive. And in the end, it is not even, it is not as effective as it is promoted to be. So the different types of recycling, let's say something like pyrolysis, changing these plastics to fuel. One, can you get a feedstock? Two, are we sure we can contain these gases if we run an environmental impact assessment? Are we polluting the environment more, or we are actually doing something good in transforming these plastics? These are the questions that if you go to the mechanical recycling side, where they do like washing and crushing and pelletizing, they leach a lot of microplastics into the environment. We are still not solving any problem in the end. We go to solutions like people making bricks. Okay, it's cool. You have bricks, cheap building material. But then when this is exposed to the environment, sunshine, rain, we are going to be leaching microplastics again. So then in the end, we are really chasing ourselves in the whole, we are chasing our own tail, and in a very expensive way, because of all the systems that recycling has to go through, really energy intensive. So why don't we use this energy intensivity towards creating solutions that will actually reduce, towards more the circular economy, though recycling is also promoted as part of the circular economy, but it is really the last part of the circular economy. Why don't we move up? Why don't we reduce, redesign most of these products? Because also most of these products that they claim are recyclable cannot be recycled. We have a lot of PET bottles here that no recycler wants to take in Ghana, for example. So these are some of the issues with recycling. If it really was the solution, so many countries would not have this trash problem right now and would be finding places to send their trash out of their countries.
So beyond citizen science, you're also involved in more academic science too. So you partner up with universities and UNDP. How engaged is the scientific community in West Africa on this issue?
Very much, very, very, very much engaged. And I'm really impressed with the level of interest also in the students and also the academia generally. A lot of research is going these days in this direction, with interest from the students going into microplastics using different protocols. And I believe one of the reasons why we've not been able to tackle this problem well, especially in West Africa, has been the lack of data. And the universities are really helping. They've also realized the need to move in this direction. We are getting a lot of strife. Recently, there was the West African Marine Science Symposium, which brought together a lot of marine science universities in West Africa. And now we've decided to form something like the WIOMSA, which is like a network for West Africa, where we'll be sharing data, sharing information, have it's like an organization where best practice will be shared and then more work could be done in this area. So universities have been doing great over here, and we really appreciate their willingness to collaborate thus far. It's been really, really good in different forms, from the BSc students, the master students, to the PhD students. It's been really different levels of engagement, and also offering their students to come for internship has also been great. So yes, the universities are really involved. They are also, most of them have switched their curriculum towards these issues, environment, sanitation studies, and or have added a course minimum. In spite of this, recently we just designed a marine course program for universities in Africa also, together with the University of Cape Coast, which we work with. And we are looking forward to running out that course from September this year, to get more people, increase ocean literacy, and also get people acquainted with the different protocols that can be used to collect data that will inform policy and waste management decisions in the future.
You mentioned your PhD thesis, and with the idea that perhaps all of these horrible pollutants could be used as a raw material and have some sort of intrinsic value. Are there any technologies that gives any hope that could possibly happen at some stage in the future, or is it just too good to be true?
There are technologies. I have seen an interesting technology from CRDC. They are piloting something right now in Costa Rica. But all these recycling facilities, really, the outputs which are given sounds really great. Most of the time they are shy. These technologies are shy on giving data on what the real environmental impacts of their work is. And that is something that most of the time is ignored. However, it is very important if we are trying to solve a problem, not to create more problems in different ways. So yes, I would say yes, of course, there are some very good solutions out there. or solutions that look good. However, we've not been able to assess their environmental impact assessment, so we cannot really speak much on how effective these solutions are. However, they are kind of mitigating the pollution menace in the areas where these technologies are.
Okay, interesting. I can just pick up on one other point of your background, something that we've never really kind of thought about before is your role as a naval officer. So like in your experience, what's the attitude and awareness and concern around environmental issues within the Navy? Like, is there a potential for collaboration, you know?
Yeah, for the Merchant Navy, so we for sailors, we are really guided by MARPOL. And as 5 of MARPOL, especially for plastics, clearly prohibits the dumping of plastics at sea. And you know, we are very disciplined gentlemen and women over there, and we try to, or we stick to all these regulations because we do not want to have issues with our classification societies or the ports we are visiting, even if you discharge too much from your oil content monitor, etc. So the sustainability mindset in the Merchant Navy world is really up there. We manage our plastics well on board and give them to the facilities offshore. However, we still face the effects of plastic pollution. Now, you do find single-use plastic trapped sometimes in your propellers and rather than you have to go to the dry dock to take all this off, which is more cost. So they are also facing the impact. But there's much also to do. So with the merchant vessels, which I was on, there's this education there. However, I cannot guarantee that for, say, fishing vessels, for example, where they just go out to get fish. Nobody really knows what they do, whether they actually follow all these regulations which are set out. And I really doubt they do follow all these regulations. So we really need to create an equal playing field in this field, in this direction. Also, you know, it's very difficult to monitor anything on the ocean. Because some things you can monitor for the merchant vessels, and most things you can monitor. But for the smaller crafts, smaller vessels, we need a way to bring this audience on board sustainability and protecting our oceans more, because they really, you would agree with me, they only care about their catch and sometimes even catch fingerlings, and are also aware that they are not supposed to catch certain sizes of fishes, but they don't care. And so there's a lot of things, distraction going on in that side of fishing, with the illegal, unreported fishing and all that. So in the Merchant Navy world, I would say the gentlemen really go and women over there really go by the rules and regulations, because that is what is set out. Otherwise, you have issues from your monitors, and nobody wants to have that, paying hefty fines. So we try to really abide really well by these things, and then it becomes like a culture on every ship. But as Riley stated, there's a lot of work that we need to do to all the smaller crafts and fishing vessels and other small commercial activity ocean-going crafts.
Right. Well, this has been like a really great eye-opening conversation. I could just finish off by asking you to give kind of two messages. First off, what do Ghana's sea turtles and its coastal communities in general need from the Global North? And second, what can the world learn from your experience and perspective as a young Ghanaian activist, so we can all take better care of our waters?
Very good questions, Chris. So turtles play a very important role in the ocean system. They are also one of the smartest creatures I've ever seen, because they have this sense of GPS, where they lay eggs at the same spots where they were birthed or hatched. And that is how come all these turtles coming to Ghana will keep coming here and finding this place as their home. So there's the need to create a safe haven for these turtles to come and lay their eggs, so that they can go around the world, do all they have to do in the ocean, and come back and lay more eggs. We cannot lose this biodiversity. They are so beautiful. If you've not seen a sea turtle before, try and go for a monitoring session during the peak time, and you will change your mind on these sea creatures. Poaching them is not an option. It's really bad. It would be great to keep seeing these sea turtles in the next generation, and we all have that responsibility to reduce our waste consumption, to abolish waste colonialism, and as much as possible, be responsible and remind ourselves that it's one ocean, one planet, and we all need to be part of that solution or that change that we seek. I believe and think we should really involve the communities in these issues and the solution finding process. That way we are able to get a better understanding. We are able to get the communities also more involved. And without involving the communities, really, we can never create a solution. Community is power. The people are the power. And we need to get this message to them. We need to empower them in every way. Provide alternative livelihoods for them, yes. But it really starts with the ocean literacy. If we are aware, or if these communities are aware of the ongoing situations, naturally, they will change their behavior towards some of these things. Some communities where we work, when the fisher folks find these sea turtles in their nets, going back to sea turtles, they used to poach them, though it's against the regulations of Ghana. But with ocean literacy, awareness, raising awareness, they release it back into the ocean now. So really, we need to have that bottom up and up to the bottom approach, and really, with a lot of emphasis on the bottom-up approach, we need to listen to these communities. We need to understand what they are going through, because most of the time we do not understand. We assume to understand. And also we push a lot of blame on these communities when most of this trash in us, in some areas we work, is not even from these communities who have been affected. They were washed by the ocean currents from another community. So really, by understanding the communities which we serve is a very, 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 very strong way to stir change, and also involving the right authorities or the people in charge of these issues to be part of the solution. We cannot shy away from putting them in charge or bringing them as part of the solution. They need to be there. They need to work with the communities. And really, I believe this is the way. Education, the power of media, the power of entertainment and education in sending and disseminating these issues. And like I already said, understanding the problem is already starting to solve it. And that is what we need to do more with all these communities that we serve.
Brilliant. Well, that's a great way of finishing up. And as you say, this makes sense in every single language. So thanks so much, Richmond, for your time. Been a great conversation.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's been great talking to you. And nice meeting you too.
You too. Yeah, I look forward to seeing you in Malta.
Thank you very much for joining us on that conversation. We hope that you enjoyed it. Hope that you learned something. If you did enjoy it, please feel free to leave a 5-star review and to subscribe to any of our channels, and we'll be sure to keep you updated on future productions.
These are conversations that you just can't afford to miss.